WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into another Maryland Crab Cake Tour week around here, as well as some Orioles baseball homestand that's going to last forever. We'll see how the outcome goes this week. We just know they'll put a runner on second base if they do get to the 10th inning at some point. Big times around here. I've been on the radio. It's my 32nd summer on Baltimore radio. It is our 25th year as WNST. We're going to be celebrating that on August the 3rd. I am re-releasing the Peter Principles very slowly, as well as putting together some columnist thoughts about Lamar and the Ravens and the OTAs. We are going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour this Friday at State Fair. We're in Catonsville. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I'll have these instant lottery scratch-offs to give away. Also, our friends at Window Nation actually did a segment with Pete Carinci the other day with the awesome Window Nation bucket hat. I don't know when the Orioles are giving their hats out, but until then, I'll be wearing the Window Nation hat. 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. Do what we did last summer, taking great advantage of that right now with savings. You get 5 years, 0% financing. You buy two, you get two free. 866-90-NATION, our friends at Window Nation. Also, shout out for our friends at Royal Farms and Cole Roofing. Had some Royal Farms chicken last week. It had been like a month because I had been away. Don't sleep on those Western fries. That's all I'm saying about Rofo. Luke Jones joins us now to look, dude, you got a busy week and a half. The Orioles are home. They don't let me in. You have to go. The Ravens have OTAs. You're busy. They don't let me in. You have to go. So this OTA time and where we were a year ago and where we were a month ago and where we were 2 weeks ago, people have gotten down on me. Believe that, believe it or not, on the internet, after listening for 31 years, all of a sudden, because Bisciotti lied to me, kicked me out, Harbaugh lied to me, DaCosta lied to me, Chad Steele lies to everybody, that I am now anti-Raven and down on Lamar. It is an amazing, I say to these people, have you been listening for the last 5 years? I don't know that I would have been the guy giving Lamar Jackson $185 million of guaranteed money, believing that I'm absolutely positively going to win a Super Bowl. I don't know that I've seen that body of work. That's me being a professional. And that's 31 other teams that said, yeah, we'll play with Anthony Richardson. We'll draft somebody before we give him a record, before we give him the most amount of money in the history of the NFL. The Ravens didn't want to give him the money either, right? The Ravens fought with him for a long, long time. Where are you on all this now that it's settled in and you're actually going to go out there and watch football? Because to be really honest, nothing's changed, right? Like, he's been the quarterback the last 5 years, other than a couple of OTAs in here and again and December. We've talked about nothing but Lamar Jackson potentiality, throwing the football, running the football, all of that. Now he has more weapons. So this is maybe the most interesting conversation we've ever had about Lamar Jackson. Now that they put up, he signed, they're here, and this is what the franchise is for 3 years at least.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this, and I'm sure we'll continue to talk about it because it's just what we've gotten used to talking about for over 2 years, specifically as it pertains to the contract. Look, this was always the best outcome for Lamar Jackson and the Ravens if you're looking at the scope of most realistic outcomes, this was always the best case scenario that Lamar Jackson would resign. He would resign and get a top of market deal, but it would have a traditional structure to it, which would in turn give the team the proper protection, whatever you want to call it. But on the flip side, he is properly compensated for having been an elite quarterback over the last few years. And you and I will continue to fight about his passing prowess and you underrating it and me being realistic about it, but also recognizing that he has had plenty of passing prowess and shown that, even if it has never been top of the league, but you couple
and
that
he hasn't
with
been
his
surrounded by elite talent. We have blamed the lack of passing on Eric, injuries, you know,
Greg Roman
any
being a big
James
part of
Prochet and Devin Duvernay, and put Greg Roman in there, right?
Greg Roman being a big part of that. And by the way, knock on Greg Roman at previous stops. But that said, the Ravens always wanted this to be the outcome to this. You know, we talked about the potential for a trade. We talked about the idea that, you know, whereas you were much more in line thinking that was going to happen, I was much more skeptical that would happen. But I always acknowledged that there was a point in these negotiations, and a point, frankly, that wasn't that terribly long ago, that if they got the right offer, I think they would have been willing to do it. But that did not materialize. And if that doesn't materialize, you don't want to give the guy away or trade him for less value than what he's worth. So, yeah, this was always the best case scenario of Lamar Jackson signing long term and remaining a Baltimore Raven, because, well, what else are you going to do? Again, you can talk about all these other teams and starting over and drafting a quarterback. And look, you love your guy. The Ravens loved their guy when they drafted Kyle Bowler in 2003, and then you realize you can't play, and then you're stuck, and you have a team that can't go anywhere, in January. So, we're going to see how it plays out. Look, lots of quarterbacks get paid with no assurance. There's never an assurance that you're going to win a Super Bowl. There's no assurance that Patrick Mahomes will win another Super Bowl. Although I certainly would bet on it based on what he's shown as far as being the best of the best today.
Well,
But
you said something, and you're not a gambler. And we do support Hollywood casinos in Perryville here, and plenty of people are gambling. Your friends are gambling. My friend, everybody's gambling. But I've known you a long time. We're not gambling men. This is the gamble. This is really at the crux. If you had a fantasy football team and you had to build your team, would you give Lamar Jackson 20% of your cap? Would you sign on knowing what you've seen? Injuries on the field, off the field. How you feel about him, whether he can throw the football, all of that, right? Whether you would make him your guy or not, or whether you would opt for a different circumstance. I honestly believe deep down that there was a general manager or an owner out there that thought, we're going to bring this kid to town because we're going to bring the circus to town. We're going to be a relevant franchise for the next 3 or 4 years. We're going to have this exciting football player. And our fans haven't seen that here. I thought that some Minnesota Vikings, somewhere where they want something that's the next thing, that he would have been more attractive than he was in free. I thought that I was the jerk that was a little bit down and thought maybe not, right? Nobody says maybe not about Burrow or Mahomes or I mean, and again, part of this is the style, part of this is race. I mean, I see racist people. I get accused of being a racist because I'm not convinced Lamar Jackson's the best quarterback in the league. I'm like, you might want to look at my 31 years before you start calling me a racist. But I see racists. I mean, I see all of that that goes into the last year of this cacophony of sound. From the Players Association, owners, collusion, Bisciotti, all the way down to now it's done. And now the question is, are they going to win a Super? Would I bet on them to win a Super? Now that they're constructed, do I think they have the best chance to win a Super Bowl? Better than if Tyler Heinicke was their quarterback or if they were going to the rookie pool, for sure. So they gave themselves the best chance to win. Now, whether they win or not, that remains to be seen. I thought Lamar would be more attractive. I mean, I really did. I thought I was. Too neg I was too hard on Lamar. I was because I have been hard on Lamar. Lamar's given me reasons to be. I've seen the tweets. He hasn't played. I all the negotiating style that I looked like it rubbed Eric and John the wrong way until it didn't, until they overpaid him, bid on them against themselves, and got happy last week at the press conference. They're going to be much happier having him. The fan base is going to be much happier having him than whatever the alternative was. That's not what I'm asking. What I'm asking is, are they going to win a Super Bowl now?
No one can predict the future. I mean, and they didn't overpay him. They paid a market. I mean, that's what market is. You can, whatever you think Lamar's worth, he wasn't going to sign for that. So that's not his value. In the same way that he wanted a fully guaranteed deal and no one was going to sign him to that. So that's not his value either. His value is what the Ravens gave him. And it's very much in line with what Jalen Hurts just got. It was a little more than Jalen Hurts. And that's kind of how this works. Joe Burrow will get more than Lamar Jackson. Justin Herbert might. Probably will get more than Lamar
But look at the
Jackson. I
bidding
mean,
war
that's
on
how this
Watson
works.
last year, right? Like it was teams were lining up for this awful,
Yeah, I hear
debilitated
you.
human, and Lamar was just dangling out there, and Lamar didn't even get on a plane and like show up, wind up walking into a building with Arthur Blank or anything. Like the collusion part of that, these guys are scumbags. I mean, I'm not saying Lamar didn't deserve a contract. I'm just saying I wouldn't have been the guy if I owned a team saying I absolutely know I'm winning a Super. I can't get him on the field in December the last 3 years. That's just a fact. So I like to me, the fan base is satiated. I mean, they've done their job. They really have. I mean, I think DaCosta has done. If people think I'm down on DaCosta as a human, I am. If you think I'm down on a football mind, DaCosta's done an unbelievable job of bootstrapping this thing up over the last 4 weeks, because this thing was teetering. I mean, this thing was teetering into, oh, it's May, he's not signed, and now they're at war with their quarterback. And you and I would have been where we've been for a year and a half, except worse, a lot worse, if Lamar would have dug in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you want me to say at this point. I mean, it's done. We're going to see. There's no guarantees. There's no assurances for any quarterback, especially guys who haven't won a Super Bowl. They're all in the same camp until they win one, right? I mean, Mahomes is the one right now, and I'm not counting Stafford because he's at the very end of his career at this point. But Stafford was part of that group for the longest time until he wasn't anymore. Everyone's a loser until they win one,
Dude,
right? I mean, that's
well, and then
how it
that's
works.
the steak knives, right? The Glengarry Glen Ross, first prize, the Lincoln Con second prize, steak knives. Well, you know what? Joe Burrow got steak knives because he lost, right? And it's amazing to me. I guess I'm just on the WNST Twitter too much, and like I see Lock and Four down the dial fighting with fanboys, of which you're not one and I'm not one, but I know what it feels like, and I get that deal. But to say that Lamar is more accomplished than Joe Burrow, like, dude, Joe Burrow came a minute and a half from winning a Super Bowl. Like, Joe Burrow beat Patrick Mahomes. Yeah, like, Lamar Jackson is not more accomplished because he had an MVP 5 years ago
Four
than
years
Joe
ago.
Burrow is right now. Like, he's just not.
Let's be accurate. 4 years ago. Look, would I take Joe Burrow over Lamar Jackson? I think I would. Do I think it's, you're presenting it as though Joe Burrow is worlds ahead of Lamar Jackson? I fully disagree with that.
Well, they're apples and oranges, man.
Well,
It's like comparing a shortstop to an outfielder, or like, I don't know. Like, it's just, they almost play two different positions
I mean,
when it
they
accounts
start.
for offense, when it how they get their offense. They play two,
They're
they play the
different,
game
yeah.
way differently.
Yeah, they're different. I mean, they're both quarterbacks. They both have done a lot of winning, a lot of winning. And I'll continue to say that you sell short Lamar Jackson's regular season success, even though I understand it's not postseason success. But I'll also give you a ton of quarterbacks who failed in the postseason for a long time until they didn't anymore.
Our
And
number
that's
one
kind of.
concern about him the night we saw him in Canton was, is he going to be able to play in December? And he hasn't in 3 years. So, like, I keep going back to that. And I will keep going back to why he wasn't on the sideline in Cincinnati and saying that just
I mean,
he got
are we going to
everything
just
he
talk about
wanted.
this forever, Nestor? I
Well,
mean,
we're
he
going
signed.
to. We're absolutely going to when they don't play till September, right? Because this is all about expectations. So set the record straight, because you're getting frustrated with me. Where are the Ravens? What happens now? They come in fully over the weekend. They got jersey numbers. I mean, this is installation. This is get down the business, and everybody in the building's happy right now, right? Like, literally.
Yeah, as they should be. I mean, you better be happy if you just gave your quarterback 185 million guaranteed and 260 max. I think they're certainly happy about that. But they had rookie camp this past weekend. We did not get a chance to watch that as a media for whatever reason. That's been open for years, and well, we didn't get to watch it. I guess John Harbaugh didn't want us out there watching the rookies run around
So
because
just so everybody knows, their war isn't just with me.
it's just But I think it was very much a case of the NFL media policy encourages rookie camp to be open, but does not require it. So, well, the Ravens did not open it up, but they did have access. We did talk
So
to
they
John
want you to have a
Harbaugh on.
great relationship with these young men, but you're not allowed to meet them.
Well, I mean, we weren't going to. I'm talking about watching practice. I mean, they had the podium. John Harbaugh was brought to the podium. Zay Flowers was at the podium. Trenton Simpson was at the podium. Big Sala. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name yet. I need to work on that one a little bit more. He was at the podium, but my point was you couldn't watch practice. And look, nothing earth-shattering from rookie camp. Not something I lost sleep over, but was a restriction of access that I am going to point out because, it seems odd to me that you wouldn't open that up to let reporters
I
and
want you to
photogs.
discuss how they're doing business, because they've thrown me out to the point where the president doesn't answer phone calls from legitimate media members. Like, this isn't, I just want to be clear with everybody who listens and watches and knows who we are, that they think it's Nestor against the Ravens. The Ravens have been doing this to the media. I'm the guy that raised my hand and has been retaliated against and had my career threatened for raising my hand and saying, you guys aren't operating the way you used to, the way you should, in a community facing manner. It's not community facing to be shutting your building off the weekend you bring the rookies in. It's not. That's not community facing.
Yeah,
It's not.
and again, it wasn't shut off entirely. It was just that we didn't watch practice. And again, I don't think anyone listening cares about that from in a big consequential sense, because look, it's rookie observations, and I couldn't tell you very many interesting observations from rookie camp over the years, but just wanted to note that. But you know, that rookies were in over the weekend. We're about 2 weeks out from actual OTAs starting, meaning when it's full team practices, non-contact, of course, but full teams were about 2 weeks out from that. And every expectation is Lamar Jackson will be there. And, you know, we'll see about some of the other veterans. We know veterans, you know, kind of on and off or out there for the 3 weeks of OTAs. And then obviously mandatory mini camp is in mid-June. So we're getting to the point where we're talking about on-field workouts and practice. And there's certainly a higher level of interest, not just because of Lamar, but Todd Monken and Odell Beckham and Zay Flowers and a new offense and seeing what that's going to look like. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of hype. There'll be plenty of highlights of running around in shorts because that's how it always works this time of year. But
Zay
certainly there's a
Flowers
lot
is
of,
going to look great. There's no
yeah,
doubt.
there's intrigue.
Whenever Odell gets here, and if he's not here today, guys, I don't want you counting heads, okay? I mean, if Odell's not here today, he'll be here tomorrow, and he'll be ready to play in September. He's a veteran, but no Calais Campbell, Marcus Peters, some of the real gray beards
Yeah.
aren't a part of the organization right now. So there should be more helmets out there to some degree, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's certainly some position groups that are going to look different. I mean, one thing that we talked about late last week, but the signing of Rock Ya-Sin, even though John Harbaugh did not shut the door on a Marcus Peters return over the weekend, you know, Rock Ya-Sin was signed to come in and start opposite Marlon Humphrey. Now, you know, we'll see how that plays out. And he's someone who has had some durability concerns. And I'm not going to disqualify the possibility of a Marcus Peters return, but it certainly doesn't seem like that's what their plan is, right? Certainly wasn't their plan A, or they would have re-signed him to begin with. So, but you know, they've got to figure out their secondary a little bit. I think there are plenty of young options at corner in terms of depth, but who's going to be the nickel? Who is going to be meaningful outside corner depth behind Marlon Humphrey and Rock Ya-Sin? You know, last year it was Jalen Armour-Davis early in the year until he really struggled and couldn't stay on the field. You know, he was a fourth round rookie, and his knock at Alabama had been his injury history, and he had injuries last year. So I still think they could stand to add another corner at some point in time. And I'm not saying that that will be a big time addition, but I could see a veteran addition. And maybe it's someone like a Kyle Fuller, who was here last year, of course, a local kid, and tore his ACL in week one. But you know, I think that's a question. Safety going to look different. No Chuck Clark anymore. So, you know, Marcus Williams obviously will be at free safety, and Kyle Hamilton moving into more of a starting safety role after playing the nickel last year. So, you know, the secondary, I don't think it's this major red flag or anything like that, but it's going to look different. So, how does that play out? And not that we're going to get answers in OTAs in May and June, but I do think that's one of the position groups that I'll be watching as we get closer to the season just to see what it looks like, because you do have a couple different pieces in the mix there that, you know, a couple guys that have been in that secondary for a long time who aren't here anymore.
All right, while we're on the secondary, since we're talking football and not ownership or contracts or Lamar, Brandon Stevens, moving him, interesting. The
Yeah.
Rock Ya-Sin thing, you said he has durability issues. I just chuckled under my breath. They just signed a quarterback for $200 million that hasn't played the last two Decembers, right? Like, literally, we're talking durability issues. And it made me think strangely, and I know you may have a little sour, but like Brandon Carr, right? Like, part of bringing a guy like that in was, he plays 16 games. He played for the Cowboys. Every year he plays. When you bring guys in that don't play, and if Dennis were here, I'm wearing my Coons Baltimore Ford logo here, Dennis would say, availability, durability is the best availability, and availability is the best ability. And like, it is concerning when they sign guys that haven't been on the field and moving guys' positions. This is the time of the year to do all that. And this is when they discovered Pat Ricard, Pro Bowler, right? Who's now Pat Ricard. Hey, I might be on the team, and you know, maybe there's a role for me here. Where did Greg Roman go? I don't see him around here. The old playbook. So this is a time of the year where that transitional part of that all happens. But guys with something to prove, Rock Ya-Sin, came in, looks like he's delighted to be here, signed a nice contract. But I looked at his stats and said, guys never played a full season. How Is this guy going to be on the field in December?
I mean, it's a fair question, and that's one reason. I mean, he was on a 1-year deal up to $6 million, so that means, of course, there's some incentives built in there. I haven't seen the full structure yet, but there's some questions there. There is. I mean, he played 15 games in 2019, so that's almost a full season, as a rookie with Indianapolis. Since then, 13 games, 13 games, 11 games. That's kind of Jimmy Smith-esque right there, if we're being honest. And Jimmy Smith, good player for a number of years, good Raven, Super Bowl 47 hero late in that
Bought me a
game,
drink at the Chaucer 3 weeks ago. Thank you, Jimmy. I appreciate that. Very nice of you.
But Jimmy be the first to tell you availability was an issue for him throughout his career. So, again, that's why you need depth. That's why you need depth. That's why you can't just say, okay, here are our starters. Here's our nickel. Here are our two safeties. Here's our dimeback. We're set. Because we know, and we've seen that firsthand here in Baltimore go back 2 years ago. And I can think going back to 2014, big time, even for a team that made it to the divisional round. Nothing can torpedo a potential contender season more quickly than having some issues in the secondary and having some issues at corner when you have a couple injuries. So I think that's going to be something. You mentioned Brandon Stevens. I'm glad you did, because I was a little surprised by that, quite frankly. I thought with him, he filled in late last season. Remember, Marcus Peters had the calf issue that he sustained in that Cleveland loss and missed a couple games after that. That I thought Brandon Stevens held up pretty well there,
I
considering
saw
he's
that
kind of.
and I'm thinking out loud, and you haven't asked a question, and I wouldn't expect Harbaugh to be honest anyway because he's not. But maybe this is a tryout to say, could you do this? And if you can't, we know you can play corner, because I feel like
Well,
this is
yeah,
the
I mean
time of
that.
the year to do that. This is the time of year to try yourself out at second base, right? If you're going to
Right.
try it, right? Put him in the outfield for a couple days, let him practice out there for a month. It's May. Maybe. I mean, that's what they did with Pat Ricard. I mean, I guess that's why they brought it up, right? Like, hey, try this,
Sure.
and if it doesn't work, you're still in the rotation here, right?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, except he played mostly safety as a rookie. Remember, Deshaun Elliott went down and Brandon Stevens was starting for them down the stretch in 2021. So that's where I was a little confused. One thing I will say, though, and I was even talking about this with a couple other reporters on Saturday at in the aftermath of Harbaugh talking about Brandon Stevens, you do wonder if you think back to last year. Because who was their nickel last year in the second half of the season? It was Kyle Hamilton. He was playing the nickel exclusively for them, or almost exclusively, let's say. But you almost wonder with Stevens moving to a safety spot or focusing on safety a little more again, maybe we need to reevaluate how we think about Mike McDonald's secondary and his defense and his sub packages. We've always thought of the nickel as what, a third corner, right? Doesn't have to be. We know that. So maybe with what they try to do and how they want to try to match up and the way the tight ends line up as slots so often, maybe it is a scenario where you think about safety, a backup safety being the nickel. And maybe if you have Brandon Stevens playing more safety, maybe that affords the opportunity to move Kyle Hamilton to that nickel spot a little bit more. He starts at safety, but he moves to the nickel when you go to the nickel or dime package. So Marlon Humphrey for years has been obviously a starting outside corner when they just play base, but for multiple seasons, he's moved to the nickel, at different times. Now, I don't expect that this year, but we know that he's done that in the past. So maybe we need to think more about those backup safeties in terms of nickel and dime more so than the backup corners that are on the roster. However, I'll still point to that outside corner depth behind Humphrey, behind Rock-Ya-Sin, who we mentioned has had some health concerns over the last couple of years and hasn't played a full season. Who are their outside boundary corners that are you're going to need? You're going to need one or two other boundary, one or two other outside corners to start a game here or there, or fill in when someone turns an ankle, something like that. You're going to need that over the course of the season. So who is that right now? You look at it, Jalen Armour-Davis, year two, hopefully he can make a jump. Hopefully he can stay on the field. I thought it would be Brandon Stevens, but apparently he's going to work more at safety, at least for the time being. So, you look at Caillou Blue-Kelly, who, of course, they just drafted in the fifth round. We'll see what he looks like. But that's where I do look in the secondary and say, all right, is there another addition to be made? And again, doesn't mean it's Marcus Peters, but could be another veteran corner that's dangling out there. And not saying they'll sign him this week. Could be They bring them in during mandatory minicamp week, or they bring them in the first week of training camp in late July. But that's certainly of all their positions. And you know, we can mention left guard. You know, we haven't talked about that a lot. That's going to be a competition. But of all their position groups, Rock Ya-Sin obviously helps where they were post-draft at the cornerback position. But that still feels like a spot that there's another move to be made there at some point between now and the start of the season if you really want to fortify your depth.
Well, you talk about the front seven defensively. I don't want to say they have an embarrassment of riches at this point because I think they'll miss Calais Campbell.
They will.
But the linebacker position and what they've done there and the way they've drafted there and the way they've signed there and Roquan Smith there and what they're expecting out of Oweh and what you might expect them to bring Justin Houston back, who was a big brother or an uncle to a lot of these kids, right? That there will be more veterans, and that's the way Eric operates, right? That whatever the team is, I mean, it's the first week of May. This isn't going to be the team. There's going to be a guy or two or three across both sides of the football that are going to join this team. Maybe a veteran left guard before it's all over with, right? The front seven defensively, are you happy with that? Are they going to be able to get after quarterbacks?
I think the front seven in its totality, I feel pretty good about. I think you look at the defensive line, I do have some concern from a long-term standpoint. You know, when you look at the age of Michael Pierce and how little he's played the last few years because of injuries and opting out because of COVID, and he's on the wrong side of 30 now. Brent Urban, who's presumably going to play a little bit more now. Not that he's going to, I think he's going to start, but he's going to play more than he had last year because he's that five technique Calais Campbell kind of build, at least. And you look at Justin Madubuike and Broderick Washington, who I thought both had a really good season last year. They're both in a contract year. So you kind of look at the state of the current defensive line. I think it's in place for this year. You feel good. And I don't think it's necessarily a great group, but I think it's a good group. But you know, that part of that is I want to see Travis Jones, our third round pick from a year ago, really take a step forward. So he at least looks like, okay, you have all these other guys that are either older or in a contract year. Can he be a guy that's going to be an anchor for you up front?
Well, Brandon Williams is the only guy that's really gotten paid up there, right? Like in a while,
yeah.
they're wanting to have another Brandon Steve or a I just lost
Brandon
my
Williams.
Brandon Williams, yeah. Train of thought. Brandon Williams,
yeah.
If they have to give another lineman, and I think Madubuike would be the guy, right? Like he'd be the guy you'd look
Could
at
be.
And say, if he plays big, you might have trouble keeping him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to steer it back to Lamar, but that's the acknowledgement that is always going to be in play now. Not just Lamar, but they also have other near the top of the market guys that they're paying. You can't pay
everyone.
Are you
putting Lamar's name in where Flacco is and he's costing so much against the cap and we can't do that because we paid Joe. We paid Lamar.
It's a consideration. It's a consideration. It's part of it. That doesn't absolve you of making bad moves. That doesn't absolve you of trying to make moves to improve your roster. I never excuse the Ravens from adding more and doing more at wide receiver on the second half of Flacco's career. I understood the challenges, but you still had to, you had an obvious need and you couldn't fill it. But you paid money for other things. So, but the point is bringing it back to the D line, there is that long-term question. Linebacker, inside linebacker, talking about the off-ball guys. I mean, obviously you have Roquan Smith, Patrick Queen. Now we know he's not getting the fifth year option. It would be surprising to me if he is back after this year. However, given the player that he is and the steps that forward that he took last year, I think he is of much greater value to the Ravens being on the team this year rather than trading him. And I'm not sure what you're even going to get for him when he's in the last year of his deal and he's an off-ball linebacker. I mean, I think you're much better off having a motivated, maybe a little ticked off Patrick Queen having a good season, playing next to Roquan Smith in the same way that Ed Hartwell and Bart Scott and go down the list of all the guys that played next to Ray Lewis for years. Playing with him, having a good year, Queen gets paid in the offseason. Ravens get a really attractive comp pick the following year. In the meantime, you have Trenton Simpson that you drafted in the third round. He's the heir apparent to take over for Queen next year. Had a chance to talk to him over the weekend. He's an impressive kid. I think he's got a skill set that's similar to Queen. And I think part of that is also you saw some of the learning curve, some of the growing pains that Queen had his first couple years really becoming an NFL linebacker, that if you can mitigate that a little bit by having Simpson sit and play sparingly, mix him in a little bit here and there, but mainly be a special teams guy and a backup his rookie year, I think that can only help him. So I feel really good about off-ball linebacker, especially with Simpson's depth being added to the mix. Outside linebacker, look, the upside is there. I mean, we've talked about it with Oweh. I think Oweh is, this is a huge year for him. It was a disappointing year two for him. I don't think there's any way to mince words about that when you considered where the expectations were going into last year. And I think the major name is David Ajabo. Fully healthy. We saw him have a cup of coffee late in the season last year, did some nice things, but had the Achilles. You know, they drafted him with the understanding that that was not a 2022 move. That was a 23 and beyond kind of move. So full offseason with him. They brought in Chuck Smith, who was a pass rush guru, who's their outside linebackers coach now, I think highly regarded around the league. So I'm intrigued to see what he can do with those two guys. So there's a lot of upside I just gave you, but they've got to do it. And as you mentioned, yeah, I think that there's also a place, there is a rationale, there is a pathway to bring back a Justin Houston, someone like him at the very least at some point between now and the start of the season. And DaCosta even talked about this back in January. He was asked about Justin Houston at that point, and he flat out acknowledged, well, last year, you know, last summer we signed him in early July. And, you know, if that's in the cards again, and look, we love Justin. He liked playing here. We'll see where he is with his career in the offseason and where, you know, where we are from a business standpoint. And, you know, we'll see if we can get something done. And if we do, it probably would be in the summer. So I could totally see that scenario. You know, overall, the front seven, I feel pretty good about it. But like I said, the little bit of long-term concern up front, and you are going to miss Calais Campbell. Say what you want, and I get it. He's going to be 37 in September, and I'm not saying I would have given him $7 million fully guaranteed like Atlanta just did, but he was still their best defensive lineman last year. And was he going to be again? I don't know, but that's a guy you have to replace. So they're certainly going to be hoping Michael Pierce is part of that equation, even if he's not the same player in terms of an alignment standpoint, but impact at the very least. And you're going to be looking for some of these young guys to step forward because, you know, that is a group that beyond 2023, it's a big question mark in terms of what it looks like from a depth chart standpoint. And it's not as though they drafted any defensive tackles early. So there's definitely some question there long term. Like I said, at the edge, you know, and be remiss if I didn't mention Tyus Bowser will be in another year removed from the Achilles, so that should help with him too. Don't want to forget about him, but at the edge, upside is there, but known commodities, you know, the jury's still out, and could certainly see them adding a veteran to the mix between now and September.
He is Luke Jones. He will be at Camden Yards and in Owings Mills and out on the interwebs. You can follow him at Baltimore Luke and Luke at WNST.net. Any final parting shot on the Ravens here this week, other than not much is going to happen so much here. We went through a hell of a news cycle keeping you up late at night, right? And the Orioles weren't even on the West Coast all the month. But now it's the time for pay is over. Now it's almost getting to be time for play, as Coach Billick would say.
Yeah, at least fake play, right? At least fake football we're talking about here. Practice, especially in the spring where we're talking about guys running around in helmets and shorts. And look, that's fine. We keep the proper perspective. But yeah, I mean, we just spent some time talking about you know, potential addition or two or three. For the most part, however, this is mostly what the team's going to look like at this point. You know, for the most part, other than a couple positions, you feel like it's mostly set, and just going to be a matter of competing and kind of seeing, you know, the shell game, who's going to line up where and all that. So there's some excitement there. But, you know, the next couple weeks, you know, that again, the guys are in the building, voluntary workouts. We know that. But we're about 2 weeks out from OTAs. You know, I believe I want to say it's the 20th, is it the 24th? Something like that is the first OTA that's open to the media. So we'll be out there for that and expect to see Lamar Jackson throwing to Zay Flowers and other guys. And we'll see, you know, I would assume Beckham will be there at least for some of the OTAs. That's how most of the veterans work. Most of the guys are out there at least for some of the days, even if they're not out there every single day. So they'll get their work in. And, you know, we're about five and a half weeks out from mandatory mini camp, and everyone will be on the field then. And then they'll shut it down for, what, 6 weeks, and then we'll be talking about training camp. So it is wild. Schedule, we think, although I saw Peter King made mention that maybe it's not definitively this week as they're trying to finalize the schedule release for the NFL. We thought Thursday night could still be Thursday night, but I know there was a little bit of question about that. But that's going to be coming soon. So you want to be on the WNST Baltimore Positive.
Well,
text
they have
service.
A lot of moving parts, by the way, with television networks, yeah. Games, Lamar signing, players signing, what team's going to be relevant, where, you know, owners have to sign off on Monday nights and Sunday nights and third, you know, everybody needs to be kumbaya. It is, you know, maybe it's harder than you think.
Yeah, well, and now what? You're going to have a Black Friday game, I guess, is introduced this year. And keep in mind, you have Christmas. So, you know, Christmas is what? Christmas Day is a Monday this year. So you're going to have a Christmas slate of games and Christmas Eve. So, yeah, there are a lot of moving parts. And, you know, there's international games, all that at work. So we'll see how it plays out. But again, we think the schedule comes out this week. But again, that's not 100% based off of reading Peter King on NBC early Monday morning. So we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, we're starting to get that context. I mentioned the roster. We'll have the schedule. We know who they're playing. It'll just be when and where and what time and
well,
all that.
Well, they can have a game in Europe. They have Jacksonville and Nashville on their schedule.
Sure.
They can't have a game in Mexico City. I found that out, that they're remodeling the stadium down there. I didn't realize that because when I saw Chargers and Niner, you know, West Coast teams, Arizona, I thought, well, those are the kinds of teams they'd love to take Lamar to Mexico. They'd love to take Lamar to Germany. They'd love to take Lamar to London. Now that Lamar's here, maybe the Ravens become more of a candidate in that way. I don't know, but I can imagine, you know, putting the NFL schedule together, it really does feel like a jigsaw puzzle. And I've seen all the stories on that, but I think it gets a lot harder with Thursday night football and games and time off and all that stuff.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned that because you mentioned Lamar, Aaron Rodgers with the Jets now. Until those deals became official, until you knew for sure the NFL is in a holding pattern. Because
they weren't going to put the Jets
I'll tell
on
you
Monday
this.
Night football.
Well, but I'll tell you this, if the Ravens had traded Lamar or he had signed somewhere else, Ravens weren't going to get nearly as many primetime games as they're going to get now. And same with the Jets now with Aaron Rodgers. So that is part of it. There's no question about it. So, yeah, we'll see how it plays out. I expect to see the Ravens on primetime plenty. Yeah, I think you'll see the Jets on primetime plenty. And, you know, we're going to see how it plays out. It's a loaded AFC. We know that. We've talked about that. I mean, my goodness, you look at a collection of 9 or 10 quarterbacks in the AFC, you know, ranging from Patrick Mahomes to even someone like Russell Wilson, whom people have buried. But, you know, we'll see if Sean Payton can revitalize that scenario in Denver. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. It's going to be fascinating because it is a loaded AFC.
All right, we got a loaded slate around here all week. We've got the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're taking it to Catonsville, back to the original homeland. Our first Baltimore Positive sponsor, State Fair. We'll be giving away the instant lottery, the throwback to the lottery's first ever scratch-off. We had a lot of winners. These have been lucky tickets. We were at Fadley's 2 weeks ago. We had winners. We had winners 2 weeks ago at Captain Larry's. We had winners in Middle River, or is it Essex, down at McFall's, Oyster and Reel last week. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Pete Cringe. We had some great guests here this week as well. We've had Olympic champions. Allison Felix going to be joining us this week, as well as some words for National Kidney Foundation and our friends at Sante. Had a great, great conversation with Natasha. I got to get over to Harford Road and try her brittle, as well as some survivor stories for kidney donation and kidney donors as well. Learn more about that at BaltimorePositive.com this week. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We're around. He's watching baseball all night. But if it gets to the 10th inning, they'll put a guy on second base. Trust me. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore Positive.